You are listening to Germantown Community Radio, WRGU 92.9 FM. Welcome to the Jumpstart Philly Real Estate Radio Show, a monthly radio program that spotlights positive real estate development and neighborhood revitalization throughout Philadelphia. Jumpstart Philly is a unique community development program that trains, mentors, networks, and provides funding to aspiring real estate developers throughout the entire city, including Germantown, where the program was founded. Jumpstart believes that you can do well by doing good and focuses on removing neighborhood blight, scattered site rehab, creating a healthy mix of affordable and market rate housing, and avoiding gentrification through slow, steady growth. Interviews are conducted during Jumpstart Germantown's Jump in Our series on select Wednesday evenings at 7 p.m., held via Zoom webinar or in person at our office. For more information about these events, check out the events page at jumpstartgermantown.com. This episode features a discussion with Palak Shah, founder of Open Spaces Women, an organization dedicated to empowering women with knowledge to build wealth and financial independence through real estate investing. The interviewer is Angie Williamson, our executive director of Jumpstart Germantown and Jumpstart Philly. I hope you enjoy the conversation and be sure to check out the podcast version of this program at jumpstartgermantown.com/media.
All right, wonderful. Well, we're going to go ahead and get started. I'm sure some other folks will join us, but I want to get started right away with our wonderful guests for this evening. First, let me introduce myself. So my name is Angie Williamson, and I am the director of Jumpstart. And I'm so excited to be with you this evening for our Jumpinar. We have these about twice a month, and we're now alternating between virtual and in-person. We like to be able to access them virtually so people from anywhere can attend, but then also have those in-person ones to help with the networking and just meet people face-to-face. And I'm so excited to be here tonight with our guest speaker, Palak Shah. Palak is a Jumpstart Germantown graduate. I've known her almost since the beginning of my term with Jumpstart, and it's wonderful for her to join us this evening. She has been an advocate for Jumpstart for investors and developers for years now, and she was also a mentor for us for a while, and she has done other speaking events for us, and we're really, really grateful to have her back. And I just want to do a quick introduction for Palak, and then I'm going to turn it over to her. She's going to talk with us for a little bit, and then we really encourage you all to put your questions into the Q&A, and we'll be going through those after her presentation. So if any question you have for Palak, just pop that in the Q&A, and we'll get those answered at the end. We want to make sure and leave lots of time for that. And then I'm going to ask Derek if you want to go ahead and close out the PowerPoint. Thank you. All right. So Palak Shah is the co-founder of Open Spaces Capital and Portfolio Mastery, which is a community that helps working professionals grow their real estate portfolio without the DIY and hustle. It is her passion to help other investors build generational wealth through real estate investing to make work optional and achieve financial freedom. Palak is an engineer by trade, and after the birth of her two kids, she decided to make the move to entrepreneurship to be able to spend more time with her kids. And though Palak has invested in real estate for many years, in her first few years investing full-time, she purchased, renovated, rented, and refinanced properties, creating an eight-figure rental portfolio. It's really impressive. She gives back to the community. She knows what she's doing. It has been just a pleasure to work with her over the years, and I'm really excited to have her here this evening. So I'm going to turn it over to you, Palak.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here. And welcome, everyone. Thank you, Angie. Jumpstart Germantown is like home. We're always reaching out for and anything new that's happening, that's how we know that it's happening, because it happens at Jumpstart Germantown first. So yeah, really, really thankful for this community and for Ken and Angie and Derek and the team here and all of you guys. So today we're talking about women in real estate. And I wanted to kind of talk about the lessons that I've learned over the course of my journey as a real estate investor, because I didn't come from money. I didn't come from a background in real estate investing. So I learned all of these lessons along the way, and I wanted to share some of those learnings. So if you're getting started, if you're kind of, you know, in the beginning phases of your journey, you can kind of skip some of the mistakes that I might have made or accelerate your process a little bit faster by learning from everything that I'm going to share today. So the first lesson that I would like to share is, it doesn't matter what they think about you, what is your net worth? And this is something that as women, I think we are trained to be people pleasers. We are trained to make sure everybody's okay around us. We're always making sure that people around us are comfortable. We're always reading the room. We're always, you know, we sense the inflection in people's voices. I remember when I used to call lenders early on, and I felt like I was a complete newbie. And it's very weird, right? You've built up a career, you know what you're doing, and then suddenly in real estate investing, you show up as a brand new investor. And I was in my late 30s when I got started, so it was very strange. And I would constantly listen for the change in their tones when I would ask lender questions. And based on that, I would, in my head, determine whether the question was a smart question or it was a stupid question. And this is all in my own head. I don't even know what they're thinking, right? This is what we as women do, because we're constantly taught to read the room, to make other people feel comfortable, to constantly wonder how they think about us. And over time, what I have realized is it doesn't matter. What matters is your net worth. What matters is how much wealth you've made. It doesn't matter what they think of you. And same goes with working with contractors. It doesn't matter what the contractor thinks. When you don't know something, when you show up, when you know something, you show up, none of that matters. What matters is how your deal is going to go. And so once you have that at the back of your mind, it really eliminates a lot of the things that you build up, because that's how we're raised. We're raised to think about other people and how they feel about us. So that eliminates some of that. I would also encourage women, and this is something I had to learn the hard way, to apply that maybe throughout our own lives. Like maybe if it's Christmas, like somebody's idea of a holiday and what's considered a magical holiday may be different than yours. And making your own decisions on how far you want to go is going to allow you to carve out the time that you need to invest in real estate. And so whatever the idea that society puts on us, none of that matters. What matters is what our net worth is. And I love to give the example of Cardi B here. She started from very desperate circumstances, and she is a rock star now, right? She has a high net worth. And she said, I check my bank account constantly. She's like, I love money. I'm constantly checking my bank account. So we view her as an artist, and we look at her and we think that, hey, this person's such a great performance, that's why they have money. That is not true. Just because they have talent, that alone doesn't get them the money. They know how to manage money. They're looking at their money all the time, and that's why they have high net worth. So it's not just about how we are all perceiving her. She cares about her net worth. She's looking at her bank account all the time. So that's the first one, is it doesn't matter what they think about you. What matters is your net worth. The second one is to learn to trust your gut and to learn to trust our instincts. And ever since I was a kid, at least for me, I don't know about you, Angie, but like when I was a kid, they were constantly telling me like, oh, no, they probably didn't mean it that way. I'm sure it's fine. You're just thinking that they meant to offend you. They probably didn't mean it that way. Well, what that did is that kind of constantly made me question my gut and my instincts. And so when it came to real estate investing, I'm going in distressed properties, sometimes on my own, sometimes with a realtor who's also a female. And I'll give you an example of a time when me and Stacy, who was my agent, we were in a distressed property that was supposed to be vacant. And we went in the property, and she'd had knee surgery, or she'd hurt her ankle or something. For some reason, she couldn't go down the basement steps. And she said, Paula, can you just go down on your own? And I was like, yeah, you're right here. It's vacant. I'm going to go down. And then something, my instincts, my gut, something just told me that that was a bad idea. And I just stood at the steps and I looked down and I was like, Stacey, I don't know if I should go down. Something's wrong. And she's like, okay, if you don't feel comfortable, just don't do it. And then, I'm all of the things that we've been taught since we were kids, like, oh no, it's probably fine. You know, I'm having this internal dialogue. And then I had read somewhere that when you have a gut feeling, it's not just a random feeling. It's actually a culmination of data that your brain can't process really fast. And so it comes up as a gut feeling, but you're actually analyzing a lot of information and it's just presented to you like a gut feeling. So I said, okay, let's dissect this. What is happening here? And I started noticing that, you know how a lot of these basements have those glass boxes, the bricks, yeah, the glass bricks for lights. And it has some faint light coming in and I could see the shadows change. And then I heard some sounds of somebody moving around. It was very faint. And I was like, okay, this is why I'm feeling like I shouldn't go down, because I think somebody is down there. And if I hadn't listened to my gut, I don't know what would have happened, because after a while, this person kind of showed up in the basement and they were like, aren't you coming down? And I was like, well, not anymore. I'm not coming down. And me and Stacey ran out of that house. And,
oh my goodness.
And this is property that's supposed to be vacant. The electricity was turned off. There was no heat. And so this was a bad idea to go down those steps. And what I wanted to communicate here is, when you start trusting your gut and when you start trusting your instincts, and when it comes back to you with response that, hey, you were right, it builds confidence. And then now you can make bigger decisions with your gut and your instincts, because it has responded in a way that you thought it should. And so instead of going against your gut and going against your instinct, learn to trust your gut. That was my second learning. And this
I love that. I think that makes so much sense, especially in that sense, in that scenario. I can envision you thinking like, oh, I should be tough. I should do, you know, and it's like this battle going on of what, you know, it's like, if this were a man, they would just go down there. And it's like, nope, be smart, be safe. And the idea of that your gut instinct is all of this data that you are processing, and that it's a very wise, you know, intuitive thing.
Yeah.
Really.
And then
it's what keeps you safe. So yes, that's great.
Yes, absolutely. And it also makes you feel bad, right? Like, oh my God, I'm wasting this agent's time. She's going to have to bring me back here sometime, or maybe we'll lose this deal. Like, you have all these things where you don't want to let people down. And as women, especially, like, we don't want to let other people down. We don't want to waste their time. Well, learn to trust your gut. And when you communicate that with people around you, people always understand. And until I started doing that, I didn't realize that, hey, they were fine if I would have just been open about it. Hey, listen, this isn't feeling comfortable. Something's wrong here. And Stacey was like, yeah, don't go down if you're not comfortable. And we're out of here. As soon as we heard somebody talk to us, we're like, we're leaving now. So yeah, learn to spot those red flags and trust your gut. This has happened since then multiple times where we haven't entered in business relationships with people because of a gut feeling. And that person, we found out later that they swindled somebody else. And so when you have that feeling, when you have that gut feeling, your instincts about working with someone, just make sure you think about it. Don't distrust everyone, but make sure that you give it the importance that it deserves. Mm-hmm. So the second one is learn to trust your gut. The third one is something that I figured out over time is, you're very lucky if you have zero trauma from your childhood, but I haven't met anybody who has zero trauma. Well-meaning parents can still do things that, you know, they don't know they're doing it wrong. And so working on our childhood trauma, especially a lot of women from our generation, we were raised with so many mixed messages. You have to be independent, but you still have to be likable. You have to make your own living, but you still have to have a, I don't know, Pinterest worthy house. Like there were all these mixed messages that we all grew up with. And working on some of those things has really made me a better investor. What that has done is it has removed so much noise from my brain. And when I do make those choices, like, okay, which way am I going to go this time? It makes me very comfortable that, hey, this is why this is a dilemma for me, because we were, all of us women were raised with those mixed messages of whether we should be independent or whether we should be whatever women, a woman is supposed to be. And so work on that trauma, be true to yourself as much as you can be. That's the hardest thing to do is, you know, really being honest with yourself. And just if you don't know something, speak up. And that's working on all of the things that brings us today to whoever we are has really helped me become a better investor, become outspoken, be able to speak my mind as much as possible. Hey, we're all a work in progress, right? As much as it's allowed me to really be a better investor. So, you know, work on your mental health, work on whatever you think is holding you back. There's nothing wrong with that. The next one is know your numbers. There are two things that I would say is something that we all need to master before you ever think about buying a property, which is number one, deal analysis, and number two, finance. And if you don't know how to analyze a deal, if you really don't understand how to analyze a deal, don't buy a property and ask questions until you can figure out what is a good deal. And I find that because whether this applies to everyone, sometimes we're just too embarrassed to ask that question. Like, I still don't understand. Is this a good deal? I still don't understand how to do analysis. And don't go out and buy a property until you feel very, very comfortable that you understand what a good deal is and how you're going to finance it. And so those are the two things. Don't be embarrassed to ask questions until you figure out what makes a good deal. And the best part about working with a lender like Jumpstart Germantown is that they won't lend to you if it's a bad deal. So that's the most amazing part about working with a lender that's local, that actually cares about the community, is they won't lend on a bad deal. So sometimes even if you have other avenues to borrow money, it's better to go with someone like Angie's team so that they can help you eliminate deals that may not be a good idea. So
asking questions is so key for anyone, but especially women that like, don't be afraid questions. To ask or to be afraid to look stupid. And at Jumpstart, that's definitely something that we highly encourage. Like we want people to send us deals that they don't even know if it's good. And we'll, you know, we're not going to be like, of course this is bad. Like we, you know, it's a learning process. And so we will go through a lot of detail to explain why for us it doesn't work and you know what you could look for in another deal. But I think that is so key, and especially for I would say younger women. I know when I was first starting out, I was so afraid to ask my boss any question. I would spend hours like just spinning my wheels and doing this research, where if I had just gone and asked, it would have been a 2-minute thing that I could have saved time and money and energy and just, but I didn't want to look dumb. I was so afraid of looking dumb in you know, my first boss's eyes. And so I think that relates to all aspects of our lives. But for sure in investment, you know, if you don't ask that question, you might be losing a lot of money. So
yeah, and you're
great.
Absolutely. And your first deal sometimes ends up being your last deal because you don't know whether it's a good deal or not. So make sure you ask questions, rely on your lender. And when they decline a deal, take that as, hey, you saved me from a bad investment here. And that's, you know, that's how you should look at it. I love what you said, Angie, that it took you a while to go to your boss when you were younger. I'll give you an example of Pete was my counterpart as an engineer. We both started at the same time. We were both the same age. We both had the same amount of experience. And I constantly noticed that the way he dealt with situations was so different than the way I dealt with situations as an engineer. Somebody would ask us a question, and I would be so embarrassed if I didn't know the answer. I would be like, oh my God, how dare you not know the answer? You are a horrible engineer because you don't know the answer. And Pete would look them straight in the eye. We would be standing together. He would look at them and he'd be like, why do you think I would know that answer? That's dumb. Like, I wouldn't know that. And I would look at him and I would think, like, this is the difference in how he thinks versus how I think, because he's thinking you're dumb for asking me that question. And I'm thinking I'm dumb for not knowing the answer. And so that's kind of, you know, that's kind of in line with what you said. And, you know, the other side of the spectrum was right next to me every time this happened. And, yeah. And I started thinking, like, what? Why would I not think that? And maybe Pete took it three steps ahead of where I would probably stop.
Right.
He was quite abrasive and people loved him anyway for it because he was very outspoken. I could have at least stopped at the point where, listen, you're not dumb and I'm not dumb either, but I don't know the answer, right? That could have been a neutral way to think about it.
And not beating yourself up and having that negative self-talk. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Right. Not it's thinking. Like you said, we're all works in progress, right?
We're all works in progress. Yes. So the next one, so we did, it doesn't matter what they think about you, what matters is your net worth. Learn to trust your gut, work on your traumas, and be true to yourself. Know your numbers and ask questions until you know the answers. You can be whoever you want to be. That's number five. You can be whoever you want to be as long as you're willing to be uncomfortable. And sometimes, you know, the first deal, sometimes it takes so much out of us because real estate investing is you're doing so many things at the same time. You're building a business. You're borrowing money, especially if you have no experience with finance. You're learning how to do numbers and you're building wealth. So many cycles are being broken at the same time. So if it makes you super uncomfortable, that is completely normal. And you can truly be whoever you want to be if you're okay with that. If you're okay with that discomfort and sit with that discomfort, don't just like go to the other side and ignore it. Just sit with it and let all the feelings come up. And I, you know, I'm talking about feelings, but it's really related to our mindset and how we perceive investing money and money in general and building wealth and building a business and doing the numbers and all of those things. So kind of think about everything that comes up. And I'll give you an example. Once don't ask me why, but once I ended up with a wealth hypnotist and he asked me a question and he said, complete this sentence. Money is. So you can do this exercise too on your own. Money is. What's the very first thing that comes to mind? And for me, what came up was the root of all evil. And I'm like, what the heck? I'm here to build wealth. Why am I saying the root of all? I don't believe that. But like, these are the things that are ingrained in us because maybe we overheard somebody say it when we were kids. Maybe we watched a show often. Maybe our parents, I don't know what it is. But think about the things that you're breaking cycles on as you build wealth. There are so many different things. So if it makes you uncomfortable, that is totally okay. But we can be in this day and age, we are in such a great spot in society. You know, Philadelphia is an amazing city. We're in a really great age in 2024 where we can truly be whoever we want to be. But we have to just be okay with it making us really uncomfortable. And then the last one, risk is a muscle that you have to flex. Risk taking, the ability to take risk, it's a muscle that you have to flex. I always thought that people who were able to take risks were born with some kind of a talent that, hey, this person is just a risk taker. This person can take so many risks there. That's why they built this big company. I could never do that. But the thing is, it's like a muscle. The more you exercise it, the more the bigger risks you can take. And when I started, I was afraid of losing $10. I actually argued with Lowe's when they delivered a stove because it was dented in the back and he was only willing to give me $10 off for it. So $10 mattered that much. And then that number, my fear of risk is still there. It's just now I can take from $10, it became $100, it became $1,000, then it became $100,000. You know, it just... You're still working on the same thing, except now you can expand it more. So risk taking is a muscle, flex it. Don't think that people were just born with it. We didn't come from money. I grew up in a one bedroom house. My mom was a teacher. You know, I grew up on hand-me-downs. Once I asked my mom for a for a new dress, they called it annual function, which is kind of similar. I grew up in India. It's similar to prom here. And I was like, so can I get a new dress? She sat down and told me this story for 2 hours on this old, I don't know, this old family, this family that was really poor and they tried to spend money beyond their means. And I was just like, oh my God, I don't want the dress. It's okay. Like we didn't have any money. So she's like, just wear what you have. So that's the kind of background I come from. And for me to be able to take risks and, you know, we just purchased a 15 unit property. For me to be able to do that, it's really taken a lot of steps to get there. So it's really not a talent any one of us is born with. It's a muscle that we flex over time and then we just get better at it. We can lift weights that are heavier over time. That's all it is. So start small and go big from there. So we did.
I think what I love that you ended with the take risk, because I feel like all the other steps help you take those risks by trusting your gut, by working on yourself, by, you know, all these other, by being able to analyze the deal. All of those things lead to you being able to take those bigger risks and being able to flex those muscles. So I think it all feeds into it and it makes so much sense. I love that.
I love it. Thank you. So quick recap, and then I'll hand it back to you, Angie. It doesn't matter what they think about you. What matters is your net worth. Learn to trust your gut. Work on your traumas and be true to yourself, not to anybody else, yourself. Know your numbers. Don't ever think deal analysis and finance is not important. Those are the two most important things in real estate investing. You can be whoever you want to be as long as you're okay making yourself uncomfortable and flex that risk-taking muscle. Those are my six lessons so far in real estate.
If you're just tuning in, this is a discussion with Palak Shah, founder of Open Spaces Women, an organization dedicated to empowering women with knowledge to build wealth and financial independence through real estate investing. The interviewer is Angie Williamson, our executive director of Jumpstart Germantown and Jumpstart Philly. Thanks for listening to the Jumpstart Philly Real Estate Radio Show on Germantown Community Radio, WRGU 92.9 FM. And I hope you continue to enjoy the discussion.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. We have quite a few questions, which is excellent. I love to see it. So we'll jump into those, but I want to reiterate that this is such a great conversation. I'm really, really enjoying it. And for everyone that's on the call, we will summarize those six steps and send them in an email tomorrow. I've been taking notes. This is just really great stuff and great information. So if you were so engrossed in it that you might have missed a little bit, then we'll send out those notes. And it's also being recorded, so you'll be able to go back and take a listen as well. So let's dive into our questions. So Crystal has our first question, and it is, how did you create a crew to rehab your properties? And was it difficult being a woman doing that, putting together your team?
Yeah. So the first property that we bought, because we didn't know any better, was a rent-ready property. And I think that's all my brain was ready for in terms of taking a risk. I think if I had immediately jumped onto a property that needed renovating, maybe I probably would have never invested. But that's the kind of property we first bought. And then at the closing table, I asked the person who sold the property to us. I said, do you have a contractor that you recommend? Because I could tell they had done some work to it. And he gave me the number for their contractor. And then what we did was we found a couple of smaller projects in our house and in that property that we had. It was not, there was still some things that were not fully done. And we gave those projects to the contractor. We saw how he worked on those projects. We compared his prices to other, we got three more quotes, compared his prices to other contractors. And then we realized that he was a good option for us to work with. So when we did a full gut renovation, we took him with us and he was the one who gave us the quote. And he is the one who we gave that project to. We, in terms of a crew, I personally have really preferred to work with general contractors. You can do subs and manage your own construction project. I think that is building a whole other muscle and taking a whole other level of building a business. If you can find a good licensed and insured general contractor, if you can ask for references, go visit their job sites or ask for pictures. When you do all the due diligence on a good GC, they can really take your journey to the next level. Just make sure you vet them really well.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah, that's great. I think what we have heard a lot is that, yeah, having that GC just allows you, like you said, go to that next level because it's taking, takes a lot of time to manage all the subs and to do all that work. And so when you're trying to build, having a GC you can trust is definitely gold. So
yeah, and a lot of new investors still have a full-time job and trying to do everything, your project then is going to go on four times longer. And then now it end up costing the same at the end of the day with all the mistakes you'll make, all the things you have to learn.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. All right, next question is from Angela. And they're wondering, what are some of the questions that they should be asking as a beginner who wants to invest in their first property?
So as a new investor, you want to make sure that you master two things. Number one, deal analysis, and number two, finance. So those are the two things you definitely want to master. Figure out, hey, do I understand whether a deal works or not? Am I looking in the right neighborhood? Where there are neighborhoods where the, if you're focusing on the BRRRR strategy or if you're focusing on flips, there are neighborhoods where it works. There are neighborhoods where it just doesn't work because the neighborhood doesn't allow for maybe higher cash flow or it doesn't, for whatever reason, there are neighborhoods where a certain strategy works and doesn't work. So look in the right neighborhood and then master deal analysis and finance. Those are the two things you want to do. And then the third one is you really have to learn how to build a team and work with a team of vendors. And as an employee, I, you know, over time moved up the corporate ladder and I managed a team, but it was not the same thing as managing vendors. And that's a whole different thing that you need to learn. How do you work with, how do you vet a contractor? How do you work with a contractor? How do you manage the project in terms of budget and schedule? So you want to make sure that you know how to do all of that. But it all begins with mastering deal analysis and finance in the right neighborhood.
Excellent. So with that management of, you know, the project management that you talk about, how do you think you did learn that? Was it experience? Were there mentors that you worked with?
Well, so Ken and Jumpstart for one, absolutely. But with managing that project and keeping it in control. So what I learned from project management, even before being a real estate investor, is always think that the project will go over budget and it is going to take longer than you anticipate. And so you always build buffers. That's how we always manage projects as an engineer. You know, we worked on factory floor for different projects. So did the same thing with real estate investing. Always build a buffer in your construction numbers and always build a buffer in your timeline. So if your contractor says that, hey, I can do this job in 2 months, I'm going to, in my head, I'm thinking, okay, that's 3 months. Because something will definitely be different than what you're expecting. If And you know, a lot of seasoned investors will say that it's not whether something will go wrong. There'll always be at least one surprise in any construction project. So having a little bit of contingency funds always helps. And then managing the money is your job. I find that a lot of new investors, they think, I have a GC now, so he's going to handle everything. The GC's job is to be at the job site to manage the on-site part of the construction project. If it's a big company, they will have a back office that are helping them manage the money. But most contractors that we work with are not going to be at that level. So our GC, his wife does his books on the weekends. So she's not going to have time to keep tabs on every single item. So it's our job then to keep track of the money and let them, they're creatives, let them be creative, let them do their thing. And you manage the money. And when you keep an eye on the money and make sure you're only paying them as much work is done, now you're not only protecting yourself, you're also protecting him because he's not doing that. Your GC isn't doing that. And so that looking at it as a partnership, as opposed to an adversarial relationship, like, oh, I'm going to keep tabs on him so he doesn't scam me. It's not like that. It's about, it's just not their skill set.
Yeah, no, that's great. Having very clear roles, knowing, you know, who's doing what and what you're responsible for. And ultimately, as a developer, you're kind of responsible for all of it, but, you know, making sure that you're not putting too much control into the GC.
Yeah, that's I love that you said that, because even in project management, you know, you can save all the emails where somebody didn't get back to you on time or they didn't do their part on time, but no one cares. At the end of the day, you as the project manager are responsible. It doesn't matter what anybody else did wrong. At the end of the day, you're in charge of it. So you have to be accountable at the end.
And then in line with what that last question, you mentioned the finance and deal analysis, and Veronica has a question about what has helped you get better with deal analysis?
Oh, doing it many, many, many times. So analyze deals, so many deals, to the point where you have a property, we call it the property avatar. So you analyze so many deals that you come to a point where you have an avatar in your mind. So I know that in the area that we invest in, if you buy a property for, say, 60 to 90K, you put another 50 to 75K in it and it appraises, the after repair value is over 200K, that deal's going to work, right? Because I know what the cash flow is. I know what the market rent is for a property like that. So you analyze so many deals that now you have a template in mind and you look at a deal and you can immediately say whether this would work or not. So practice. That's the short answer, is practice.
Excellent. And I think, you know, you could probably practice on hypotheticals. It doesn't have to be ones that you're necessarily going to do, but just, look at what's out there on the market, run the numbers. Is it, a thumbs up or a thumbs down? So that's
absolutely
great. All right. And then Angela is interested if you would share the story of your first property, investment property.
So the first property that we invested in was through a wholesaler. And so the first property that we bought was a rent ready rental, but that's, I don't think that story is that interesting. The first property that we renovated was through a wholesaler. We took that contractor who I was talking to about how I got his information from someone at the closing table. And we took him with us to look at that property. It had been, I think it had been almost a year of analyzing deals, of trying to understand the neighborhood and looking at properties. And that one, we went in and I was finally feeling, don't take a year, guys. But like, that's my history, but you don't need to take a whole year to do this. I also had a newborn and whatnot. There's a lot of different things going on. So we went to this property. And it was through a wholesaler. And this wholesaler has a really good technique of making the property seem very exciting and enticing and unavailable to new investors. They only show with open houses and it's only open for 1 hour. So everybody is there. And then you look around and you're like, wow, this deal must be amazing. Everybody wants it. So we looked at it. Our contractor.
Yeah,
it's a good tactic, right? So we looked around and we were like, it was actually ended up being a good contractor. Looked around, he said, "This, I can do this for $55K." And by then we knew, like, if he can do it for under $60K, it would work. So then we went there and the wholesaler said, "Well, if you want it, you have to give us a check for $5,000 right now." And I said, "Wait, isn't this the thing where you like put in an offer and you go back and forth?" And they were like, "Nope, this is a wholesale deal. That's not how it works." So our contractor lived around the corner. He went home, got a check from his wife, and he said, "Well, don't cash this. This is just to hold the property." And we went home, wired the money, and then they sent us a picture of the torn up check for our contractor. So, you know, he wasn't getting charged for it. And renovated the property, did a lot of things wrong. Whenever it's your first deal, you don't know how much to renovate. I find that a lot of new investors, we over-renovate the first deal because we don't know when to stop for rental. So we did the open concept floor plan and put in all the bells and whistles. And then we were like, okay, wait, that doesn't work for this. Overall, at the end of the day, that deal was profitable. We still own the property. We bought it for $55K. We put in another $55K. It appraised for $135 in a few months. And then 2 years later, we refinanced it and pulled more money out. And it appraised for $200K a few years later. So it ended up being a great deal. But yeah, all of the mistakes.
That's wild. Yeah, but I think that goes back to like trusting your gut. You know, you're there with your contractor and it wasn't how you expected with the wholesaler saying this is how it goes, but you trusted your gut, you went with it and
we looked at enough deals by then, right? You look at enough deals, at some point it's gonna start making sense to you.
Definitely. Excellent. All right. So Lauren has a question about how you've learned to manage your finances, your taxes and write-offs after a project is complete and your tenants have moved in. Do you work with a real estate accountant? Do you do it yourself?
Yeah. In the beginning, I started with a spreadsheet, just putting everything down on a spreadsheet, saving all the receipts. I might be the geekiest person when it comes to taxes. I love tax time because I always overpay every month because it forces me to save. And then tax time, you get a refund. It's really nice. But then after a few properties, it came to a point where I couldn't keep up with everything. So we met an accountant. If you're looking for a real estate accountant, make sure that they serve other real estate investors who are doing the strategy that you're after. So we focus heavily on the BRRRR strategy. And so if you work with an accountant who doesn't know this strategy, they're not going to understand how to book your capital expenses in the beginning when you're renovating the property and putting the property in service when it's up for rent. There are all these terms that they just wouldn't understand. And so make sure you're working with the right accountant. So after a few properties, then we started working with an accountant. I was still doing all the bookkeeping myself. And then the accountant recommended that we use QuickBooks Online. So we signed up for QuickBooks Online. It's like $60 a month. And that really made my life much easier. And I didn't have to save every single receipt and like type everything up in an Excel spreadsheet. So that was good. There is a really good tool if you're looking to manage the numbers and the transactions. It's called Stessa, Stessa. It's free. And that's a really good tool for managing transactions if you're looking for a tool. QuickBooks Online is paid. It's more robust. But Stessa is good enough for new investors if you're looking for something.
Excellent. That's a great resource. And I have never used an accountant for my finances or my taxes. I had no idea that that's great information to know that even if they're a real estate accountant, you want to make sure that they have worked with the same exit strategy that you've done. So that's really great information.
Because otherwise they're learning on your dime, right? And and then somebody else will have to go back and fix any mistakes that they've made. So make sure they understand what you're doing.
For sure. All right. Casey has a really interesting question. So she's a healthcare professional and also sees herself switching to real estate investing full time in a few years and is interested in how you handled switching from, you know, a whole different career in terms of mentally and, you know, starting over again. So she's interested in kind of how you made that choice and how you handled it.
So there is a reason why you as a healthcare professional want to step out and move into real estate investing. I would focus on those reasons. So me as an engineer, I hated that I only got to work in factories, and factories are loud. I always had earplugs on, and I'm just like, I'm going to be so happy when I don't have to do this anymore. I did that for years. I was always seated at the table with all men, and I said, oh, I'm going to be so happy when I can work from home. And I had... The big reason why I quit my job probably a little bit sooner than someone else might have is I had a toddler and I had a newborn, and it was so stressful. My husband and I were always juggling, you know, did the nanny show up? Is the daycare closed? Is the child sick? Who's going to take the day off? Who's going to work from home? And it was really stressful. So for us, it was a little bit easier of a decision because it wasn't just about investing. It also made our lives significantly better. So I would focus on, what is forcing you to think about stepping out of your current profession? And starting over again is kind of fun. Find your tribe. I would say if you find a tribe of investors, this community is so accepting and so loving and so forgiving. You know, at work, how we're berated for making a mistake. In the real estate investing community, people will applaud you when you make a mistake. They'll be like, yes, the next one's going to be better. So yeah, you find your tribe and it just makes the whole journey so much better.
That's wonderful. I have to say, I do think like the Jumpstart community is the only real estate community I really know, but it is a very accepting, very advocating community. Yes. They're all rooting for one another. Yes. And it is amazing and just heartwarming to see. And I think there's a lot of, you know, resource sharing, but also just encouragement that can be
absolutely
found.
Yeah. Made so many good friends through Jumpstart. And
definitely.
And you'll find like you and your other investor friends may start investing in the same area and you'll start having lunch together. It is amazing. So yes, it's the community that helps you kind of get over all of the starting over again issues. And it's a whole different vibe. Once you're part of a real estate investing community, you won't be able to relate to your coworkers after a few years. You'll be like, I used to hang out with you and talk about, and I don't know, talk about dry cleaning. I don't know what we even talked about. Coupons.
Great. So there is, before we log off, I had a couple questions that I wanted to ask in case they didn't come up. So as a woman developer, I'm just curious if you've had experiences with contractors or other vendors who haven't taken you seriously because you're a woman and how you handled that situation.
Yeah, so this happened to me. I got this out of the way very early on because I was an engineer and people didn't take me seriously for a long time. So I got that out of the way very early on. And what I learned was if you focus on establishing a connection with someone before you talk business, now you establish a chemistry, a vibe, a connection that's outside of work, right? First, you're just getting to know each other and you're connecting with each other. When you're connected to someone at that level and then you start talking business, it feels much easier to gain that respect. So if you go in and just try to gain that respect first minute, it's very hard to do. So that's what I would recommend is, you know, just make a connection with someone. And if they're a jerk, you don't want to work with them anyway. And if they're good people, then you start talking business and then the conversation flows much smoother. And so what if they don't take you seriously? As I said, your net worth is all that matters, right? At the end of the day.
Exactly.
It also helps to tell them if you're talking to them about a property on this block, I always start with, we also own properties on that block. And then they're like, okay, this is an existing investor. And you kind of give them some proof and some legitimacy to the conversation. That helps.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And then we've had a couple of questions about mentors. And so I know, you know, it's definitely important to have a mentor. How did you find mentors that you work with or networking groups? And do you think, you know, as a woman in development, that it's important to have a female mentor, or does that not really matter as much? So just curious about the mentoring aspect.
So Ken's, you know, a role model for us, for my husband and I both. It's not necessary to have a female mentor, but I do think that as a female, it's important to have a mentor who respects women. And that will make a big difference in how they talk to you, how they coach you, how they view the world. So for me, one, your values really have to align with your mentor. And then if you want to get a little more tactical, I would say that if you have a lot of choices and, you know, you want to get more tactical about it, don't just think about having a mentor based on their success. Also kind of think about, hey, is their way of investing, how they're executing their investing journey, is that also in line with how you want to do it, right? So, so for example, if you want to, if you love the idea of renovating your own properties and being at the job site, and you truly take a lot of pride in creating something yourself, then find a mentor who's doing that. And if you are someone who really wants to focus on being more hands-off, and then find a mentor who's executing their strategy that way, because that's going to help you cut through a lot of the steps. Otherwise, the mentor is going to, you know, whoever has done something kind of knows that really well and their own way really well. So it really helps if you kind of want to do it the same way. Does that help?
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that's important, kind of how to use the mentor. It's like, you know, it's a give and take relationship, and that you want to make sure that they are doing the same types of things that you're interested in doing. We, with our program, I feel like it's the hardest thing sometimes to pair our graduates with the mentors, because we want to make sure that it's a relationship that's mutually beneficial and it's not just a one-way street. And it is, it's an art, it's not a science, but I think that's great advice. So we had a question from Amanda on whether or not you offer mentorship. And I think if you want to talk a little bit about your open spaces and what you do there.
You can follow me on Instagram at Open Spaces Women. I think that's the one thing I would say about, we do offer mentorship, but we are here for Jumpstart Germantown, and they have the best program. So if you don't look any further, that is the best way to get started. That's how I got started. Go through Jumpstart Germantown, and they have some amazing mentors too. Is that okay to say, Angie?
yes, that's fine. But I would encourage everyone to check out. And I think Derek has put it in the chat, the Instagram.
So yeah, Open Spaces Women. You can check us out. Yeah.
Open Spaces Women. So that is wonderful. So I think going through, Veronica, and I think this might be our last question, is asking, how frequently did you purchase property in order to build your portfolio so quickly?
Oh, yeah. So I saw a question in there. So I didn't build an 8-figure portfolio in 1 year. It took about 5 years. I'm sorry if that was not clear. It took about 5 years to build an 8-figure portfolio. And we did it through the Burr strategy. I started with around 25K and leverage the money to renovate properties. And then one thing that really propelled the strategy fast for us was we did a Burr on our primary residence. And that gave us a HELOC of 100K. And then I took that 100K and I put it as a down payment to buy a 10-unit building. And so making some big moves like that really can accelerate that journey. But it does, the first couple of years, the growth is very slow. So don't feel discouraged when that happens. And then about three years down the line, all your properties are going to have a lot more equity, cash flow, debt pay down, tax benefits, all that accumulates. And then in a few years, you start really seeing that acceleration phase in your journey.
Excellent. And then I think there was a question about BRRR, and I just wanted to define that BRRR. So that's buy, renovate, rent, refinance, and repeat. So that's what that's when we talk about the BRRRR strategy. So that's what that's referring to. So just to clear that up.
Yeah, sorry. I assumed everybody here is connected with Jumpstart and they kind of already know what BRRRR is. But yeah, that's the strategy. And it's been done for decades. I mean, Ken did it, I don't know how many years ago. And he was executing the same strategy that we used. We started 6, 7 years ago, did the same strategy. It's an age-old, very stable strategy that you can execute.
Yes, definitely. Well, we thank you so much for spending the last hour with us, Pollock. This was a really, really great conversation. It's always wonderful to talk to you. I wish we spoke more often. This is wonderful, and I love catching up. And these were these 6 tips were absolutely wonderful for all investors, but especially for female investors. And I'm excited to do a social media post to let the folks who couldn't make it know about these tips and make sure we get this recording out to everybody. This is really wonderful information. And I really, really thank you for generously donating your time for us this evening.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Excellent. And as you can see on the screen, everyone, our library of Jumpinars is available for free at jumpstartgermantown.com/library. So we have a really large, I think we're over 100 now, of recordings of wonderful speakers. So if you want to go back and anything that you've missed, you can go. It's categorized there for you to check out. And we are so glad that you joined us this evening for this wonderful Jumpinar. And hopefully we will see some of you at our next in-person Jumpinar. So thanks so much. And great to see you again, Pollock.
Take care. Yeah, great to see you too. Thank you, everyone. Thanks, Angie.
Thank you. Good night.
And that concludes the discussion with Pollock Shah, founder of Open Spaces Women, which is an organization dedicated to empowering women with knowledge to build wealth and financial independence through real estate investing. The interviewer is Angie Williamson, executive director of Jumpstart Germantown and Jumpstart Philly. The interviews on this program are recorded during Jumpstart Germantown's Jumpinar series, which take place on select Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. If you'd like to participate in the live Q&A with our guest, be sure to head to jumpstartgermantown.com/events and register for next week's Jumpinar. And if you're interested in starting a Jumpstart program in your own community, visit gojumpstart.org and see our how-to guide and open source training workbook. Thanks so much for listening to the Jumpstart Philly Real Estate Radio Show on Germantown Community Radio, WRGU 92.9 FM. And be sure to tune in next week.